Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Very happy to have you with us on this Friday, December the 28th. And it's time for our Friday Week in Review. This will be the last Week in Review for 2007. We will talk with two guests from different perspectives about issues that made news this week, a holiday week, but lots of news made nonetheless. And we will also welcome in this hour a new Week in Reviewer. Happy to have with us John Smart, chair of the Price County Democratic Party, a member of the Park Falls School Board. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
And also with us in studio, an old hand at Week in Reviewing, Dave Blaska, a blogger, contributing writer to Isthmus newspaper, former Dane County supervisor and appointee in the Thompson administration. Good morning, Dave.
Joy, good to be here.
And we will talk first about the assassination of Benazir Bhutto in Pakistan yesterday. Here's what President Bush had to say.
Mrs. Bhutto served her nation twice as prime minister. And she knew that her return to Pakistan earlier this year put her life at risk. Yet she refused to allow assassins to dictate the course of her country. We stand with the people of Pakistan in their struggle against the forces of terror and extremism. We urge them to honor Benazir Bhutto's memory by continuing with the democratic process for which she so bravely gave her life.
Yeah, Dave Blaska, you said to me just before we started that this really affected you, this assassination.
Well, it did, almost as much as when Princess Di died about a decade ago. And it just occurred to me, first of all, you know, we're starting to pay a lot more attention to Pakistan. I think really that is where the battle is, more than Iraq, and maybe always has been. Afghanistan, Iraq, almost sideshows. And I thought of Benazir Bhutto as kind of an Eva Perón character with her white scarf, picture a beautiful woman physically, looking sometimes pictured looking off into the distance and slightly upward. I really do believe, without that, I'm not tracking wise, and I wouldn't in a situation like this, I think that there are going to be sightings of Benazir Bhutto in the coming months and years, in that I think she will have such a hold over the imagination of people. She's actually, I think, done more for peace and democracy than she would have been able to do alive, because I think she's the first martyr. One of the commentaries I've read, I think one of the university professors here, saying that there are not enough leaders in Pakistan. They have a very thin bench, so to speak. And her two previous terms as prime minister and president were undistinguished, but I think she's going to be a rallying point for democracy.
Yeah, John Smart, your thoughts?
I think that it was a terrible, tragic thing, but it was not a surprise. I don't think it was a surprise to anyone. Benazir Bhutto was in danger from the moment she stepped foot back in the country, and In this case, I think the United States' encouragement of her to do that was perhaps kind of dangerous. I'm sorry that it happened, and I agree a bit with Dave that I think that in the long run it might prove to be very successful for the democratic movement in Pakistan, because I think that her party, the Pakistan People's Party, if the elections are held as scheduled, I think that that party could very well sweep the parliament, which could make a large change in the future.
Yeah. So do you think democracy will prevail, Dave, in Pakistan?
Well, I don't know. She, you know, some of the commentary, and here I am talking about Pakistan, only in America, but I think that she's been criticized in the past because there really is not a democratic tradition there. I don't see how she could have established it in her previous I think roughly 5 years in office. It really, for one thing, half the country is illiterate. That's not very fertile ground for democracy. So you need that kind of institutional stuff to have democracy. There's widespread belief that the Secret Service their equivalent of the CIA and perhaps military itself is infiltrated with Al-Qaeda. And in some of the debate about who's to blame, I mean, is it Musharraf or is it Al-Qaeda, I say yes,
Both,
yeah. And you have a situation there where the country is the problem. And you would not have Al-Qaeda hiding in the cornfields of Iowa, for instance, or in the hills and valleys, or in the deep forests of Price County, because we have a different society, and it's a societal change that's going to take years. But I think this is where it starts.
Yeah. And didn't Bhutto, though, say she would go after Al-Qaeda, go after Osama bin Laden, and isn't that, I don't know, isn't this assassination a message to others who would take that stand, John Smart?
Yes, I'm sure that's the case. She did say that, and in fact, that brings up an interesting point. We have given a great deal of money to Musharraf in order to find Osama bin Laden and to root out Al-Qaeda, and to the best of anyone's knowledge, that money has pretty much been wasted. We can't track it down. We don't know where the money has gone, but it apparently has not gone to any kind of military intervention in Waziristan and the areas along the Afghan border where presumably Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden are hiding. So perhaps Benazir Bhutto might have been in a position to do that. The other thing, though, is that even if she had been elected as prime minister, she would still have had to deal with President Musharraf, and whether or not she would have had any kind of real power is questionable. As I said before, I think perhaps if her party can come to power in the parliament without her even, they will find other leaders within their ranks. And perhaps that might even give more power to that movement than she would have been able to do on her own. She was a very controversial figure. The two previous situations where she was prime minister, in both cases, ended with a whole lot of problems. She was indicted. Her husband was indicted. All kinds of bad things. They were supposedly taking bribes and so forth and so on. She was not a secular saint by any stretch of the imagination. And it might just be, and I keep repeating that, but it might just be beneficial to the country the way that this is turning out, which is not to say that assassination is a good way to resolve problems.
Let me take a caller on this. Mohammed in Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Muslims are taught to say at the passing of any Muslim, so inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, to Allah we belong and to Allah is the return of all, in regards to the passing of Benazir Bhutto and the other people who were killed. As a convert to Islam, I'm still bewildered whenever I hear of something like this happening, because I can't imagine what it is someone could read in the Quran or otherwise that would cause them to think they have a right to kill someone and, innocent people who are standing around.
Mm-hmm.
I also wonder what Benazir Bhutto was thinking, and her intelligence handlers having her come back into the country and almost flaunt herself in the face of these individuals who know are so extremely opposed to what she represents.
Yeah, well, she also said, though, that no true Muslim would kill a woman, and so she felt somewhat protected by that?
Historically, if you read the history, there have been Muslims, a group called the Khawarij, who were are documented as being the most extreme, killing pregnant women and splitting open the contents of their bellies. So I don't know what she was reading to think, because these people, who I guarantee you, she and that guy who killed himself are somewhere having a conversation right now, and it's about, you mean you really think you had a right to kill me because I believe something different than you?
Yeah.
And that does happen. I don't know where she got that from.
Yeah. Dave, did you have a
comment? I think the caller makes an excellent point, and I appreciate his perspective on the Muslim religion. I do think, I said they're all to blame, but I do think this is going to heighten the... it's reminding us in America, I think, that there are some bad people out there who, despite all religious strictures against these activities, namely Al-Qaeda, do this kind of thing, and that we still live in a dangerous world. And I think supposedly this is General Anthony Zinni, did serve as chief of the U.S. Central Command, responsible for Pakistan for 3 years until the year 2000, positing that Al-Qaeda needs a country in turmoil in order to survive, but I also think that they've sown the seeds of their own destruction, just as they're no longer welcome among many of the Sunni tribal leaders in Iraq. I think they're going to have some people going in the people's Pakistan People's Party going and looking through caves in the northeast part of that northwest part of that country.
John Smart, did you have anything further on the call?
Well, I'm glad that Mohammed brought that up about not finding anything in the Quran to back that up. I spent 3 years in the Peace Corps in an Islamic country, Uzbekistan, and a very good friend of mine was the Mufti of Bukhara, high up clergy, and he and I used to have long conversations, and he mentioned one time that it concerned him very much that people in the West tended to think of all Muslims as being bomb throwers or rock throwers or something. And he said, imagine this. Imagine if my understanding of Christianity came from the old news out of Northern Ireland, where Catholics were throwing stones at Protestant children and Protestants were bombing Catholic churches. He said, what would my understanding be? And I would urge that we not take this as meaning that Muslims in general are like this, or that there's any justification for it in Islamic tradition or history.
We are talking with two guests coming from different perspectives about the news of the week. This is our Week in Review. John Smart is chair of the Price County Democratic Party, a member of the Park Falls School Board, a former Peace Corps volunteer, and a member of the Governor's Commission on the United Nations. John Smart, also a freelance writer. Also with us, Dave Blaska, blogger, contributing writer for Isthmus Newspaper, former Dane County Supervisor and an appointee to the Thompson administration, talking with us about the news of the week. Right now we're talking about the assassination of opposition leader, former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. And we will talk some about how this is affecting the upcoming presidential race as well. All the presidential candidates commenting on how this affects Pakistan and U.S. foreign policy. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, Gene Purcell in for Ben Marins. And after four, Gene and his guest will take your calls on what you think is the week's most significant news story. So your views on the news after four this afternoon. We're reviewing the news of the week during this hour, talking right now about the assassination yesterday of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. And what it means for U.S. foreign policy and for Pakistan and for the upcoming presidential race. Let's take another caller, Brian in Cedarburg. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'd just like to throw into the conversation that I think President Bush needs to take some responsibility for this assassination, for his policy failures in this region.
Yeah. What do you think of that? First, John Smart.
I agree. I think that the administration's policy in the Middle East in general has been disgraceful. But on the other hand, it follows in a pattern. American foreign policy has too often been that way. It too often focuses on the strong man, in this case General Musharraf, who can, we think, keep the country in line and do kind of our bidding so that we don't have to get involved in the day-to-day minutiae of what goes on in the country. And I think that's a mistake. And I think that, strangely enough, I think that this administration has been coming to that realization regarding Musharraf. When he declared essentially martial law in his country, the United States complained and said, you shouldn't be doing that. We're giving you billions of dollars, for heaven's sakes. You should be doing what we tell you to do. But he obviously wasn't going to do that. So then it became clear that the United States government was encouraging Benazir Bhutto to return to the country. There are recordings of Condoleezza Rice speaking with her when she was in Dubai and various other people trying to encourage Benazir Bhutto to move back to the country. So the caller mentioned something about, you know, did she realize what she was getting herself into? I think that she did, but I think that she was also encouraged by the United States. Our policy has been really kind of a disaster in the whole region as far as I know.
What do you think, Dave Blaska?
Well, it's like saying, you know, our policy against floods is a disaster. I mean, it's Pakistan is a disaster. You know, and I enjoy it. I had a look at the clock here. It took 19 minutes into the show before we started the Bush bashing here a little bit. John, you say that, you know, you blame the United States for not getting involved in the day-to-day minutiae of Pakistan. That sounds suspiciously to me like regime change. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I'm not talking about regime change.
Then how do we get involved?
Who we are supporting and who we are, you know, paying money to.
But and yet you said that we also encouraged Benazir Bhutto to return to the country. So obviously she was an opposition leader. So does that sound to you like we're trying to foster democracy, perhaps?
As I just explained, Dave, that was because Musharraf was not doing our bidding any longer.
Well, okay, so all of a sudden we're in favor of democracy and we weren't before. I mean, I think, you know, every step that he took to when he was going to exceed his term and he was holding both he was a general, he came in a coup. I think everything we've done there is to encourage democracy. Maybe we haven't done enough. But also let's understand this about Benazir Bhutto. I don't know if she had a death wish or not, but she's in the car and it's an armored car, and then she pops up like out of the moonroof here. That probably was not a wise thing to do. And I think maybe she had some message from her God that she was going to meet her fate.
Let's take some more calls. Tom in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, that last gentleman who talked, I don't know. He's in this world, I'm thinking. Here's my question. As all law enforcement type, if I were investigating this, and like any other homicide, I'd put Musharraf in one room. This is an ideal world, of course, which I know doesn't exist. I'd put the head of the CIA in another room, and I'd put the head of Al-Qaeda in the third room, because I think that's your top one of your three, or perhaps two of your three, that's your top three suspects right there.
All right. Anybody got a comment on that?
Works for me. Read them their rights, though, right? I mean, we...
Ken in Oshkosh. Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Listening to the talking heads about Bhutto's assassination, I agree with the one gentleman, it was no surprise. But over the last 5-6 weeks, we have had literally a failed state a week. So you've got Myanmar, Thailand, Colombia, Nepal, Pakistan, and it seems like it's going to keep going on. And these states are becoming destabilized. By midsummer, we will have gone through almost the entire panoply of the UN. So the last time you had a similar situation was in the midst of the 1920s, and of course you had the anarchists throwing bombs then that everybody seemed to be worried about, which turned out to be chimera. And it resulted in the Great Depression.
All right, Ken. Let's go to the talking head, Dave Blaska, first.
I talk, I walk.
He agreed with you.
Yeah, I think he did. Well, I'm not sure what the point was there, to be quite honest.
Well, let's talk about Pakistan maybe is different than all the rest of these states in that it's got nuclear weapons, and
And it's poor. I mean, I looked, you know, the per capita income there annually, of course, in Pakistan is $2,225. India, $3,139. I mean, that's comparatively different, greater. And it's illiterate. So obviously there's some systemic things that need to change there. I suppose we could send them money to buy books, but John, I would say that, and I might agree with you, that money might disappear. It's tough to account for it. It is not a very transparent society, and that is the problem. I guess, you know, short of invading, I think Barack Obama said he'd do that, which brings up the foreign policy expertise issue. I don't think that the United States is going to invade Pakistan. I just don't think you'd want them to. I don't think I want to.
John?
Yeah, just an important comment, I think, and that is the importance of Pakistan. Pakistan is the second largest Islamic country in the world after Indonesia. It has 170-plus million people, which is larger than the population of Russia. It's a very important country, geographically located where it is, between India and Afghanistan and Iran and on the Gulf.
Right.
It's a seriously important country, and the fact that they have nuclear weapons, thanks to Dr. A.Q. Khan, is a very, very critical issue. And we really need to maintain some kind of connection with that government. We can't simply ignore them. And I agree with Dave. The idea of invading or occupying like we've done in Iraq just seems pointless. But we need to keep an eye on it, obviously.
Yeah, let's hear from some of the presidential candidates on this issue reacting to the assassination of Bhutto. I have some clips, not everyone, but here is Hillary Clinton.
If there is any opportunity for the government and people of Pakistan to respond to this tragedy appropriately, it would be to move more steadfastly and determinedly toward democracy. She has given her life for that hope. And I know that the people of our country stand in solidarity with those who believe, as we do, in the rights of people to be heard at the ballot box. We're about to see that begin in our own country in just a week. And so it's a particularly poignant moment for us to extend our sympathy and condolences to the Bhutto family and to the people of Pakistan. And I certainly will do anything I can to support the continuing efforts to democratize a very important and critical nation to the future of that region and the world.
Yeah, there, Hillary Clinton commenting on the assassination yesterday of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. So, John Smart, do you agree with Hillary Clinton?
Oh, absolutely. I thought you were going to play a different clip from Hillary, excuse me, when she talked about having met and spent time with with Mrs. Bhutto and her children and so forth when Hillary was First Lady, which I thought was very moving. It's interesting that of the presidential candidates, the only ones who are really in a position to talk much about this situation, except for all the rest of us talking heads, are Hillary Clinton, because she had personal contact with Benazir Bhutto, and I suppose Senator Biden and Senator Dodd and Senator McCain, because of their experience on the Foreign Relations Committee and various other things, so that they are in a position to actually discuss it. In a way, this really focuses the presidential campaign again on foreign policy, where the campaign had been pretty much on domestic policy recently, and even the occupation of Iraq had moved off to the sidelines a little bit in the campaign rhetoric. But I think that this is going to focus the campaign back on foreign policy and the people who have some qualifications to discuss it.
Yes, in fact, let me play John McCain, who I also have a clip of his reaction to this.
The second great concern, of course, is the security of the nuclear arsenal, and that we have to act, I think, to make sure that that will be safeguarded under any circumstances that may arise. By the way, I met Benazir Bhutto. I know Musharraf very well. I know the area. I've been to Pakistan many times. I've been to Waziristan. And I'm sure that I would know how to handle this crisis.
Sorry for the audio quality there, and obviously some sirens and such in the background. But, well, what do you think of John McCain, Dave Blaska?
I actually have to agree with John on the fact that I think he mentioned Hillary Clinton, Chris Dodd, Joe Biden, and John McCain, I think, get a leg up on this. And I think it's just in terms of crass political accountability, I think Mitt Romney, Mike Huckabee, and Barack Obama take a back seat on this issue. I think they're now running for vice president. And it does put front and center the commander-in-chief's primary role, which is to protect our shores. And it also raises a question in my mind, John, the talking head up in Price County, maybe you've got an opinion on this. Do you still favor pulling out as quickly as we can from Iraq?
Yes, as quickly as we can. Yes, of course.
Okay.
I do.
Right.
It depends on what you mean by as quickly as we can.
Well,
obviously.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would say when the situation is stabilized. I think with Pakistan the way it is, I think it would be foolhardy to diminish the American presence in that part of the world.
Well, the area that we're losing, though, Dave, is Afghanistan.
Yes,
and Pakistan, not Iraq.
That's true.
Iraq never really was the center of the problem, and I think we all know that very well now. And I wish that things had been different from the beginning. But the situation in Afghanistan is deteriorating, and the situation in Pakistan is clearly deteriorating.
Right.
What happens in Iraq is, at this point, kind of beside the point, except that we are occupying the country with 180,000 American troops. We've lost the coalition. The British are going home. The Australians are going home. The Spanish and the Italians have gone home. We're left there. And it's a terrible mistake. And I do think that we should be out of that country as quickly as it is reasonable to do so.
Yeah, let's. I'm bringing this back to the presidential race. I've heard a number of commentators saying that John McCain and Hillary Clinton, as unseemly as this sounds, are the benefactors of this tragic news of the assassination of Bhutto. That this is going to highlight both of their experience as opposed to their contenders, and we are that they really get a political boost from this. Do you agree with that, John Smart?
Yes, I do. And as I said before, I think that nobody likes to talk about an assassination having good side effects, obviously. But as I said before, I believe that if the Pakistani elections take place as scheduled, I believe that the Pakistan People's Party, Bhutto's party, will probably take control of the parliament. And if they can find people in their ranks that can move up to the leadership, I think that that can work very well. In our own election campaign, I think yes. As I said, I think people like Hillary, like Senator Biden, like Senator Dodd, Senator McCain, have genuine bona fide experience and knowledge in the subject of foreign policy, and it brings them to the forefront.
Yeah, and Dave?
I agree, and I think one of the one candidate, the serious candidate I didn't mention, was Rudy Giuliani. I think it's a wash for him in that he's always stressed our domestic safety from, and I think that's, but he doesn't have the foreign policy experience, but at least he's been talking about that issue. So for him, he's kind of in the middle.
I'm afraid I have to throw a wrench into that one, Dave.
Okay.
I thought that that Rudy's comment on this, that, oh, I know all about that, I was in New York on 9/11, really just kind of blew it out of the water as far as I was concerned. He sounded like an idiot trying to connect himself somehow with this assassination.
Right. Well, maybe so, but it's probably better than being in kindergarten in wherever Barack was at the time.
Let's,
I think Indonesia, I think it was.
This issue aside, certainly now this plays into it, but Iowa caucus goers go to their caucuses on January 3rd, less than a week away. Just get your general assessment of how things are going on the Republican side first, Dave Blaska.
Well, I actually covered one of their caucuses. I'm trying to remember. I think it was 1988, and it's a very interesting process. We had a caucus once here in Wisconsin in one of the Democratic primaries, and it's an odd process. And it's I hear and I'm reading that John McCain, having ignored Iowa, now is doing the surge, so to speak, and. So this might be his moment. He's a little bit of the comeback kid. I think people like the fact that he is, I think I said this before in the show, he's got some authenticity. He's got this bio that won't stop, and he's willing to say unpopular things. I hate his campaign finance reform, but in a way I admire him for doing it because he's not putting that moistened finger in the air, as I always sense that Hillary Clinton is doing.
Yeah. What about Mike Huckabee's surge?
Well, you know, interestingly, I think he peaked on Christmas Day. That's an amazing thing. And whether that bookcase was, if it was unintentional, I'm sure they saw the film. I didn't notice it at the first time, and I know Peggy Noonan didn't notice that. But you know what? If he wanted to, he could have had an illuminated, jewel-encrusted, gold, gilt-edged cross there, too. That would have been just fine. Nothing wrong with that. But right now, it seems so yesterday, doesn't it?
I guess it does. But your thoughts on the Democratic side as we approach the Iowa caucuses, John Smart?
Well, I think to everybody's thinking, it's really kind of a toss-up. I think that all of the candidates have acquitted themselves well. I agree with what Dave said about the caucus system. It's really kind of a bizarre system, and it requires absolutely, totally dedicated people to get involved in it, especially on the Democratic side. It's more complicated even than the Republican side for the caucuses in Iowa. I've never had any experience in dealing with caucuses, although they have them in Minnesota, too, and a number of other states, I believe. But I think that probably the top three candidates, again, Hillary and Barack, and John Edwards, I have no way of knowing who's going to come out on top on this one. Right now, I would say that Hillary is in the ascendant because of the foreign policy situation, as I said before. But that's a week away, and who knows what could change between now and then.
Well, we will change topics and talk about other news of the week during our week in review. A few things happened on on the state scene as well. Maybe when we come back, we'll talk about the Green Bay nativity scene. It came down this week. There was a nativity scene on the Green Bay City Hall. It was removed past Christmas, but a lawsuit by the Freedom From Religion Foundation will continue. We'll talk a little bit about that as we come back, and we're opening up the phones for you. If you have a topic from the news this week that you would like to discuss, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today with Dave Blaska and John Smart. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Veronica Rickard in for Kathleen Dunn, talking about the Democratic Party's struggle to define Clintonism. She'll be talking with Matt Bai, who writes the blog Decoding the Candidates, coming up in our next hour. This is the Week in Review, where we talk with two guests from different political perspectives about all the major news stories of a given week. On the left today, John Smart, who is chair of the Price County Democratic Party. He's also a member of the Park Falls School Board, a former Peace Corps volunteer, a member of the Governor's Commission on the United Nations, a freelance writer, and we're happy that he's agreed to join us as a weekend reviewer. This is his first time with us. On the right, Dave Blaska, a blogger, contributing writer, for the Isthmus newspaper, former Dane County supervisor, and an appointee in the Thompson administration. We welcome your thoughts and questions for them on the news that triggered your attention this week. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Well, I said we would talk briefly anyway about the Green Bay nativity scene, which was erected on City Hall and removed this week. We heard that even though obviously it's been removed, the lawsuits will continue that challenge Green Bay's right to put up this nativity scene. It's strange in that they at first said that other religious symbols would be allowed as a part of this scene, but when the Green Bay City Council met and they received so many different requests that they decided to pull that offer, and it was just the nativity scene. Dave Blaska, what do you make of all this?
Well, you know, it's interesting that we'd segue into this because this is how we resolve our disputes with Annie Laurie Gaylor bringing a lawsuit. But that's what we do. I mean, this is the kind of society we have. I was struck by the fact that at the Church of the Nativity in the Holy Land, apparently that's under the purview of three religions, one the Roman Catholic, the other one the Orthodox, and then there's a third Armenian. It might be an Armenian Orthodox. They were cleaning the place, and they got into a dispute, so they went at each other with their broom handles and whatnot, and the police had to break it up. So there it is, the very place where Jesus was born to bring peace to mankind. There's something about religion, so at least we're handling it in this way. I don't know who's right or who's wrong, you know, but...
Do you know who's right and who's wrong, John Smart?
No, not really, no. I wish that we weren't involved in such things, but I do think that... we are, after all, a pluralistic society, and if you're going to do that, then you do have to allow everything else. There was somebody that wanted to put up a Festivus pole, there was somebody that actually put up a wreath, I believe, containing a pentacle, and that was removed by vandals, as I understand it. But I think that if they're going to do that, then they have to allow everybody, period. And I really believe that nativity scenes belong at private homes and churches and not on city property.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, it's not exactly political, except it does have some political implications, I suppose. There was a horrible story this week at the San Francisco Zoo. A tiger escaped its enclosure and attacked and killed one 17-year-old, injured seriously injured two others who were with him. There's investigations into whether the victims were taunting the tiger and provoking it to escape. But I just talked to somebody today who was saying, you know, we really ought to do something about zoos in general. We shouldn't have wild animals like tigers in zoos. Your thoughts, Dave Blaska, on the tiger attack? And,
well, one of my proudest moments, the thing that I can tell my grandchildren about is my name is on the monkey house here at the Vilas Park Zoo.
Why is that?
Well, I'm not on exhibit there, but we built it, and I was on the county board. So
okay.
you throw your name on those things, and I point that out. So I don't know. The Siberian tigers, obviously they had, who was that, Las Vegas, Roy and...
Siegfried and Roy.
They use Siberian tigers. They're endangered, though, and I think zoos have done a lot to keep the gene pool alive. And so I think, and also they're being more humane. If you remember my mind is failing me now, but the big ape that they had at the Milwaukee County Zoo, I remember Samson, and they just had him in a very sterile environment. So the zoos are improving. I don't know what happened there, but I can't imagine a worse way to die. Mm-hmm. I really can't.
It's a terrible story. Any reaction to it, John Smart?
It reminded me of a story that happened in New York years ago when I lived there in the 60s, and there were some teenage boys who were daring each other or showing off for their girlfriends or something, and one of them jumped into the polar bear compound and mm-hmm. Was attacked and killed, and they shot the polar bear. Well, it just struck me at the time that was really kind of a dumb way to deal with it. I was raised with zoos. I've always loved zoos. As a kid, I was crazy about zoos. But there is something about seeing an animal in a cage instead of, you know, out in the woods. And here I live in the Northwoods, and we see animals all the time. And I prefer to see them out there. I guess that's the easiest way to explain it.
We had that situation, John, in Madison. I think it must have been a good 20 years ago now, where a mentally ill man jumped into the enclosure of a polar bear and was killed. And I think they did shoot the bear. But and obviously his turf was invaded, and that's what they do. And they, you mm-hmm. know, this is food to them. But I think, you know, most zoos now are. And indeed was the case here in Madison. It was a very naturalistic environment with all kinds of water and whatnot. So hard to say. And with global warming, maybe they were saving polar bears too. I don't know.
Let's talk about another issue of Congressman Dave Obie and Jim Sensenbrenner lead Wisconsin House members in a taxpayer-funded mailing expenses. Both defend the mailings as an important way to communicate with constituents. It's an important way to communicate with constituents, Dave Blaska?
Well, yeah. I mean, my father is in the state legislature, and so is his father. And one of the big things was he sent out as many blue books as he could with his name stamped on it to potential voters. So that's how it's done. Or maps. That was another big perk. Dane County, we don't have the free mailing privilege, but they do on the Madison Common Council, where you get an X amount of money to communicate with your constituents. So there's two. I think the state legislature also has a limited amount. I'm surprised they didn't delve into that. They are allowed a budget for constituent contact. So it's always a push-pull between, you want to keep your constituents informed and how much of that is self-serving.
Yeah, it says here, Obie, a Democrat, spent about $128,000 in mailings, which put him 27th in the House last year, according to an AP review of public records. The total for Sensenbrenner, a Republican, is around $124,000. Some critics call the mailings a waste of taxpayer money and a way to help incumbents cement their place in Congress by showcasing the members' accomplishments. Obie and Sensenbrenner offer no apologies. John Smart?
Yeah, I thought you'd maybe quote Obie's comment about that, that he was a little disturbed that he was number 27th. He needs to do better. And as somebody in Congressman Obie's district, I can tell you that I'm very pleased that he sends out as much as he does, because he keeps me and a whole lot of other people very well informed about what is going on in the Congress. And I consider it money very well spent.
Yeah. We have a caller who wants to talk presidential politics again, so we'll go back to that. Matthäus in Milwaukee?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hi. I would like to ask a question. I don't know if you guessed. I've read it, but it's an article that came out on New York Times a couple of days ago about Hillary Clinton's experience in the foreign policy, and basically the article said Hillary Clinton never had any security clearance, nor she never sat in any national security meeting. So how do you, I mean, what's their response? I mean, she's been talking about her experience during the Clinton administration, so I'll take my answer off there.
Yeah. John Smart?
Yes, I can give you a personal story about that. Mm-hmm. When I was in the Peace Corps in Uzbekistan, Hillary Clinton was the first lady, and she made a visit to the country that I was in. And I got a message from the American ambassador asking if I had any suggestions as to what to do with her when she came to the country, and of course I said yes, I did. And she did come and spend a day in the city where I was posted. She came to the school where I was teaching, and she was scheduled to be there for 30 minutes, and she stayed for an hour and a half talking to my students, and she was absolutely wonderful. I mean, the students were terrified because there were three television crews and the wife of the president of Uzbekistan and a whole lot of other people there, and Hillary made them all feel totally at home, and she was extremely warm and generous, and contrary to a lot of the kind of publicity that she gets. And during that trip, she was wonderful while she was there. And that evening, we had a banquet, and she came over to the table where we were sitting, a group of Peace Corps volunteers, and she said, "Can I sit with you?" She said, "I like to talk to Peace Corps volunteers rather than embassy personnel. They ride around in limousines, and you actually know what's going on the ground with the people." And she stayed and visited with us for a long time. I was extremely impressed, and I was also impressed by her knowledge of the situation there in that country and around the world. She later went on to speak before the university, diplomatic university in Tashkent, the capital of the country, and she told the students there that Uzbekistan had one of the worst human rights records in the world, and she was charging them as the future leaders of that country to do something about that. She was courageous, and she represented me, I thought, extremely well as an American. I think that what she was doing as First Lady, and they talk about the 82 countries that she visited, I believe it is, and what she was doing, I thought, was extremely valuable. Whether she was sitting in on Security Council meetings or whatnot, I think that she was very much aware of what was going on in the world, and in many ways was perhaps the best roving ambassador we had during that time in the 90s.
You want to comment, Dave?
You know, it's very tough to get foreign policy experience unless you serve the United States Senate or as vice president, so I'll give her that. I think that article that the caller is referring to, I think I read that, and it was by one of the Clintons' former pollsters or advisors who kind of had a falling out. I'm trying to find his name now, but it's welcome news, you know, when anyone criticizes her, but I'll give her foreign policy. I will.
Let's talk a little bit about this. Another item in the news this week, state elections officials have canceled their deal with a software vendor that was supposed to develop a new statewide voter registration system. The state pumped nearly $23 million into the project, but state elections board officials say Accenture's work has been fraught with problems. And the story goes on. John Smart?
I really don't know an awful lot about that, to be perfectly honest, Joy, except what I've read and what I get from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and various other sources. So it sounds like things were not handled very well, and I'm glad that they're out of it, and I hope that they come up with a workable solution.
Okay, and Dave waved me off on that one, too. So let's go to the phones and take Joe in La Crosse. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. One quick note. There's no oops about it on this particular issue. The critics, and if you go back, and I was one of them at the time, said that these people have a terrible record. It's a bad plan. It's not a good idea to go with them for the voting software. And gee, guess what happened? Yeah, I'd love to have somebody go back over and take a look and see who objected to it and who thought it was a good idea. And now, based on the fact that we've pumped lots of money into it that the taxpayers will pick up the tab for and we'll get nothing for it, gosh, what a thought. The other thing is the franking privilege, the ability to send the information out to their constituents. Stuff and nonsense, gentlemen. It's a privilege that results in an unprecedented number of people being reelected to their offices and creates an incredible barrier against defeating an incumbent, except in incredibly unlikely occurrences where the president has a negative popularity rating, as he essentially does right now, and people are incredibly tired with the Congress. Otherwise, in many years, the percentage of incumbents that are reelected exceeds 98%. One of those main reasons is because of the ability to communicate with the voters about the wonderful things we've done for them in the form of earmarks and other wonderful, great ideas that someone dreamed up. I'm sorry, I'm just completely opposed to it. You want to tell your constituents what you did? Get a megaphone.
All right. We have a candidate for office.
I have to point out that the 7th Congressional District is a little large to use a megaphone.
Yeah, that's... Anyway, well, yet you got your opinion in there. Joni knew a lot about that Accenture thing, too. But why don't we, what, since he talked about the power of incumbency and elections, maybe we should talk a little bit about, I noticed, Dave, you wrote something, I think, about the Supreme Court race that's coming up this spring that was on your blog.
Yeah.
And there was supposed to be a hearing this week, but there was not. It was postponed for a bill that would provide public financing for state Supreme Court races. Let me start with you, Dave Blaska. Should we have public financing for state Supreme Court races?
Well, you know, I have always said that you can't, because if you have public financing, you're going to have all kinds of rules as to what you can use with that and say with that money. It's going to be a lot of unelected bureaucrats with a lot of pages and pages of regulations, and you're going to litigate this whole thing to the point where the common average person is not going to understand what the law is, and it will take a lawyer. I think you know, it seems like in the last 20 years, ever since Watergate or so, 30 years, that we've had campaign finance reform, and the situation gets worse and worse. We had John Kerry and you know, the 507 Swift voted 527 committees that Swift voted John Kerry. That was the result of McCain-Feingold. So, I guess what I've come down to is, why do we elect Supreme Court justices? When on one hand we say you can't say anything of substance, and the other hand, you know, you can't tell people how you would vote on an issue, and you shouldn't. They should be appointed by the governor with consent of the state senate.
Well, that was a better question to point to. But what about that idea, John Smart? Appoint Supreme Court justices or publicly finance their elections? What do you think?
I agree with Dave. I think that the Supreme Court justices, like they are in the federal government, should be appointed by the executive and approved by the Senate. The last Supreme Court justice race in Wisconsin was an embarrassment to us all. And I fear another one coming up, and I just don't like it at all. In this case, I don't think that public funding, although I do approve of public financing of campaigns in general, but I think in the case of justices that, no, I think it should be done by appointment. What? Because for one thing, too many people go and vote for these things, and they haven't a clue who they are. And who's going to, what average voter is going to go out and really study the judicial record and the legal philosophy of somebody that's running for the Supreme Court? Hardly anybody does that.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. We're out of it. And I want to thank both of you. John Smart, thanks a lot for joining us for the first time. I hope you'll come back.
Well, thank you very much, Joy. I'm delighted to be here.
And Dave Blaska, thank you very much.
You bet, Joy, and nice to talk to you, John.
Nice talk.
Oh, I think our producer grabbed John Smart's phone for her purposes there to say goodbye to him. Thanks to both of you. Happy New Year. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour. Oh, I know what Karen did. I forgot to wish John Smart a happy birthday. Happy birthday, John. She wrote me a note earlier in the hour, and I just completely forgot about it. Happy birthday to John Smart, and happy New Year to Dave Blaska and John Smart. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.